The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
One interpretation of the Buddha's teachings would be that we're invited to take a good look at change. We're invited to take a good look at the changing nature of our experience, and we're invited to take a good look at our relationship to change. And a big part of what mindfulness practice is designed to do, classically in Buddhism, is to place us in the middle of the changing nature of our life, changing nature of our experience. Because there's something about the changing nature of our life, our experience, that is very profound and very meaningful, very important to kind of address and to meet, to see in a deep way, and then more importantly, to see what our relationship is to it. Because if we don't look at our relationship to it and consider what it might be, then you'll have a relationship anyway. It just won't be so conscious. So part of the mindfulness practice is to settle enough to really be here and be able to kind of begin tuning into the changing nature. And it's not so difficult to see how things change. The years change. Winter comes to California every few years. So the seasons change. The days come one after the other. Nights come one after the other. The hours go by. We have breakfast, maybe. Then we have lunch, maybe. Then the next day, we repeat the same thing. And it's changing, but it's kind of some of the change repeats itself, and there's a return of the same kind of thing, the same season of the year, the same hour of the day, the same dawn, the same dusk, kind of. And then there's the changes of how we are over our lifetime. Some of the changes happen imperceptibly slow, but at some point it dawns on us, you know, I think I've changed. You know, if you look at a photograph from 20 years before and say, oh, and you see change. And then you have, some of us have had, you know, that major difficulties in our lives that are no longer here. It's changed. And they've gone somewhere. Those emotions, those feelings, those concerns, those fears. Some people have major issues going on currently, and it might not be obvious they're going to change. And you might succumb to the delusion of permanence. This is going to be the way it's going to be forever. And I know I've had the delusion of permanence about plenty of things that ended up to be impermanent. I kind of related to them as if this is how it's going to be forever. And And then there's the changing emotions and feelings we have through the day. I found it fascinating for a while to watch how my wakefulness and tiredness waxed and waned through the day, and kind of tracked it and watched it and see it come and go. And it was helpful for me to start seeing how it changed, because I had a relationship to my tiredness through the day that was not very friendly. And now I'm much more friendly about it, but it took a long time. And I would beat myself up, I'd be upset, I'd be angry, I'd feel bad about myself, I'd feel like a failure because I was tired. And then, you know, now I just kind of ride along. I notice a change and I accommodate the change in the best way I can. And then there's a changing nature of our emotional life. And I kind of like to think of my inner emotional life as like the weather. And so the weather changes. I lived in Tennessee for a while, and in Tennessee they had a saying that if you don't like the weather, wait 5 minutes. Because apparently it changed quite often, quite quickly in Tennessee. And so, you know, the inner landscape, the inner emotions can change. But sometimes I'm looking upon it as if it's weather, I have a kind of different relationship to it, as if this is it, or this is a big deal. It's just the weather going through. I'm upset, I'm sad, I'm happy. It's the weather. It's a very, very kind of different feeling. I like the weather. I'm actually very fond of weather. I like to go outside, and whatever the weather is, I kind of generally delights me. And so to say my emotions is weather is like, you know, for me, it's like pretty cool, pretty nice. But it's also, it reminds me it changes. And it also reminds me the weather is not me. The weather is not something that I take ownership of. And there's a way of being with the changing nature of emotional life where it can be helpful not to identify with it too much, not to make a big story about this, that we define ourselves by our emotions. So by calling it the weather, it comes and goes as it does, and it's, you know, much, much easier. And then there's a changing nature of moment-to-moment experience. You know, we go outside, perhaps, or inside, and the how we experience the moment-to-moment, is changing, it's shifting. We're aware of different phenomena, a sound, a sight, a thought, a feeling. All kinds of things are shifting and changing. And sometimes we don't see how much our experience, our perception of the world is changing, because we're kind of stuck on something. We're kind of stuck on some idea or something that's here, present. And sometimes we're stuck on some idea of being the doer. You know, I'm the doer, I'm the seer, it's all up to me. And even sitting in this last sitting, it was, you know, I was sitting here and I was pretty content and happy. And I just felt kind of the flow and change of experience. But after a while, I noticed that there was one thing that wasn't changing. And that was me being the viewer of it all. And I turned my attention to this idea of being the one who's doing the practice. And I could feel a certain kind of inner tension or pressure. I kind of thought of it more as coagulating, or is that the right word? Kind of coming together and getting concentrated. And I could feel it kind of a tightening somewhere around the area of my face and stuff. And so everything else was kind of changing and flowing, but not the doer. And so, but as I sat here, it felt like I was like, the feeling I had was I was in the ocean, and the ocean waves and everything was changing all the time. And I was a... you're not going to like this. I was a, like a, you know, they have these little round detergent pills. I don't know what they're called. They're like extra big pills, you know, I don't know. And you know, and they dissolve in the water. So I was just, like, I was in the ocean of my experience, and this this solid, you know, detergent was going to start to dissolve, you know. And I could feel as I sat here, it got softer and softer, and that sense of hardness and also started to change, and that sense of that, and this idea that me being the permanent thing, everything else can change, but me being kind of steady began to soften in a very nice way. So change. And so in Buddhist practice, there are three levels of change that we kind of relate to, or that are important. And one is the most ordinary level of how things change in our lives. Things that I've been talking about, things change in all kinds of ways. And this changing nature of things, some things just change from one state to another. So you are all changing. You're different today than you were yesterday, and there's been change. And but you're kind of still here, but you're different than you were yesterday. And then there's things that change by disappearing, by stopping, by dying, by coming to their end. And some things come to an end. And a very poignant kind of idea is the idea that the last time you're going to do something, or someone's going to do something. The first time I kind of took this into account was I was talking to a relative who was kind of elderly, and he said to me, he just bought a car, and he said, "This is the last time I'll buy a car." I said, "Oh, really?" And it was. And so, you know, it'll be a last time for a lot of the things you do, most of the things you do, everything you do, there'll be a last time. And what is that? If you could really know this is the last time you're going to see someone, this is the last time you're going to have breakfast, this is the last time you're going to look at, if you wake up early enough, the dawn coming up. This is the last time. And there will be that. And, you know, I think that it's fairly common for people to be surprised by their death. It's not like planned. You know, you put it on the schedule. Maybe you won't know your last time that you... It's kind of poignant that there'll be a last time, the end of something. And for some people, that's very sad. For some people, there are certain endings, like, finally. You know, I wish this impermanence thing was faster sometimes. Because that boss stayed and stayed and stayed. And finally, that boss left. And so I think permanence won. There's loss with change, and there's also what we gain with change. And sometimes both of those happening at the same time. So there's our relationship to that. And I've noticed that there are a lot of people who are not Buddhists who are really wise about change, because, you know, it's part and parcel of life. We have to encounter it and see it and go through it and deal with it one way or the other, all the different changes we go through in our lives. So there's that ordinary experience of change and impermanence. And then there's another kind of change that is the kind of more refined, which is the change that this mindfulness practice is designed to see when the practice is strong. And now the word for change is inconstancy. And things are transitory. They're in transit. They come and they go. And we start, when the mind gets quieter and stiller, and the mindfulness gets stronger, one of the things that becomes clearer and clearer is that in the moment, as the moment unfolds, that things are inconstant, they're changing and flowing. And if they're not, it represents that either we're stuck in some place, we're holding on, or we're kind of coagulated around something like I was in my sitting, or we're really caught up in thoughts, ideas, and concepts. A lot of the ideas of permanence we have belong to the world of thoughts and ideas. Concepts don't change very much. The concept of a tree, you can have an image of a tree, and that original tree that maybe you made that image from is long since gone, but you carry that image, you have an idea. Concepts have a kind of virtual permanence. So if we're thinking about things and relating the world through our concepts and ideas, we can have a much stronger sense that things don't change. My troubles, I have so much troubles, and those troubles, I discovered at one point that I had one of my delusions of permanence that I lived with was the permanence of the future. I had these ideas of what was coming, and what was coming was going to be that way forever. And it hadn't even come, and I was already had ideas about it, what it was going to be like. And so it was clearly ideas I had, and they might have been accurate enough, but to see them as ideas and concepts, and that I was kind of hitting my head against or struggling with not the future, the real future. What real future? But what I was struggling with is my ideas of the future. And I was banging my head against those ideas. And not a few times, I would say, my predictions, my whole fantasy, my ideas of what the future was going to bring, this future permanence, it never happened. I didn't even get close to it. But I was struggling and anxious and afraid and living this whole complicated life around these ideas. So it's a rather radical idea that most of the ideas of permanence that we live under are ideas. We don't see them that way. But as the mind settles in meditation, we don't live in ideas so much anymore. We don't live in concepts. We don't live in the future. We don't live in the past. We don't make stories up about ourselves. And then the attention, the mindfulness, starts becoming more and more aware that things are changing. The breathing, if you use breath as a focus of meditation, it's a kind of this nice flow and change and rhythm that goes on. The body sensations are constantly flowing and changing and appearing and disappearing. My concept of a hand doesn't change. I have a concept of my hand, it kind of doesn't change. And I can close my eyes and have my idea of my hand. And I can kind of make an image in my mind's eye of my hand. And I can have a very wonderful, complicated relationship with my hand. My hand is too much this, too much that, too much hair on my knuckles, and too much, you know, too long, too short, too stubby, too fat, too thin. You know, it goes on and on and on. Some people have very nice relationships with their hands. Some people have very, you know, all kinds of, you know, they'd rather not show them in public or something. We have ideas. But if you close your eyes, why don't you try doing it here now? Close your eyes. And instead of thinking about your right hand, feel your right hand. And feel the sensations in your right hand. There might be tingling, pulsing, warmth, coolness. There might be contact with your hand against some other part of your body. The contact might feel soft, it might feel hard. There might be smoothness or roughness. The sensations in the back of your hand are probably different than the sensations in the palm of your hand. The sensations on your fingers are probably different than the palm of your hand. Now, if you only are tuning in to the sensations in and of themselves, you probably feel that they're shifting and changing, probably dancing around a little bit. And even if some of them seem to have some kind of constancy, if you get closer in and feel inside of that, you probably might feel that they're made up of smaller subset of teeny little dance of sensations, tingling, pulsing, heat, that senses of heat or pressure that's slightly moving, coming into being and passing away and reappearing. And with your eyes closed, in a certain kind of way, there's no direct experience of the contours of the hand, the ideas of the shape of the hand. The edges of the hand are kind of probably diffuse. And maybe even the idea of hand falls away from some specific idea of what the hand is to just the sensations changing and moving and fluxing. So you can open your eyes. So, you know, I don't know if that exercise worked for everyone. But when people get into, like on retreat, we do this exercise with people sometimes. And there, because people have sometimes been sitting quietly for a while, the thinking mind has settled away, and the hand starts feeling really vibrant and alive, much more so than if you weren't paying attention to it. And there's a much heightened sense of sensitivity, because you're focusing on it, but also a heightened awareness of all these sensations playing there, that you wouldn't even notice if you were wrapped in the talk I'm giving. And, you know, you know, and it's like, you know, everything else falls away. But, you know, you focus on the hand and you get all this stuff. So things start seeing as they're rising and passing. And so here, the word for change is inconstancy. Some of those sensations were not disappearing, but they weren't staying set. They were coming and going. That coming and going, moment by moment, is called inconstancy in our language. They're impermanent in a particular kind of way. They're not disappearing once and for all, but they're coming and going. When in deeper, as we settle into the practice, that's the world we begin tuning into. We get interested in this world of change. And that's a different thing to be interested in than what most people are interested in. So, because we're getting interested in the process of change, not so much the thing that's changing. So, for example, I could sit here and I could be thinking about this, maybe something important that's happening tomorrow. And I'm really fixated on this because I'm afraid or I'm anxious or I'm anticipating it in some way. And so it doesn't go away. It's just I'm kind of locked into it. And because I'm interested in the thought, what's going to happen tomorrow. But if I tune into the process of what it's like to be thinking, I see, in fact, even though there's a kind of a tension that's kind of constant, that tension, the physical tension, just like the hand sensations, is actually coming and going. But more importantly, actually, I thought I was only thinking about tomorrow's meeting or something, like I was stuck on it. But in fact, in all the nano moments that we have, I'm thinking about, what should I have for breakfast and what should I pack for lunch tomorrow and what clothes should I wear for the meeting. And I wonder if after the meeting's over, I can go for a walk and here's a person who's wearing a blue jacket and then look, she has a pillow next to her on the floor and all these little nano moments of things, stuff is going on. And it turns out I'm not actually fixated all the time on that. I start seeing the changing nature of the experience. So what I'm trying to say, maybe in a clumsy way, is that we tend to be more interested in particular topics and themes and ideas more than how those things are changing. And what we're trying to do at some point in the mindfulness practice is shift from focusing on the thing, the ideas, to focusing on the process of change that goes on. And then we can start seeing our relationship to the change. We can start seeing how we create the idea of permanence, how we hold on to things and get stuck. We can see how we coagulate. We can see how we resist it. We can see how we hold on to how things are. We can see how we try to stop the river by putting, we can see how we paint or overlay concepts and ideas and feelings and aspirations and fears on top of the change. And so just start seeing in the moment the flow of change, the constancy of inconstancy as we sit. So some of this can be seen in daily life when we start focusing more on how things are changing more than how things are. It's a fascinating study to do that. In mindfulness, as the practice gets deeper and deeper, we enter into a world where all there is change. And there's a great story from the Chinese Buddhist tradition of a student who comes to the teacher and says, when everything is arising and passing incessantly, what then? And the teacher says, my imagination teacher kind of looks at the student with very clear, kind of clear eyes, and direct eyes, and says, whose arising and passing is it? And what this question does is it's kind of like me sitting here. I saw everything was kind of changing as I sat here, except for me being the doer. But if you're really, as that's begin to dissolve, that sense of a doer, and that kind of, dissolved away, there was no, if I turned to look for the doer anymore, there was no doer there. That's just part of the continuous arising and passing of phenomena. And so if you're really in that, if you're really practicing deeply, and in that flow of change, you'll find at some point, if you take around and look for that, the self that's the doer, the self that you thought you were, as if you were outside that flow of change, you won't find it. So some people, when they're asked to kind of turn around and look for that in the flow of change, something releases. There's a kind of freedom that happens oh, I don't have to hold on to this, or there's space here, there's freedom here, whereas in the past, people might be so based their whole life on the idea of self, me, myself, and mine. That's what's all based on that. But to turn around and find, wait, it's not here. The very thing that I was so attached to, it's not here. Some people get disoriented when this happens. Some people get a little afraid the first time it happens. But it's really liberating. I mean, you know, you've been carrying yourself around for a long time. It's time to give yourself a little vacation. You know, it's okay. You know, nothing's really going to, you know, you'll come back soon enough. Some people get, what, already? It was so nice not to have it. And so, so as we do this inconstancy thing, really see things arising and passing, there's a number of ways that that helps us to begin letting go of the clinging, of the coagulating, of the tension, the holding that is really kind of deeply embedded in how many people live their lives. And some people don't even see how embedded this tension is until they start doing mindfulness practice. You know, we don't advertise that, you know. Come and do mindfulness and realize how stuck you are. You know, or how, you know, how much tension or coagulation you are. That, you know, nowadays mindfulness is more, you know, in the popular world, in secular mindfulness, it's more about stress reduction. And, you know, we don't say, come and realize how stressed out you are. But that's how it kind of works, right? You have to find out first in order to know. So it can be a surprise for some people to sit down and meditate. Wow, I had no idea. But that's the beginning of freedom. And so, so I said there's three levels or kind of aspects of change in Buddhism. First is the ordinary one that anybody can see. The second is the one that is seen as the mindfulness meditation gets deeper, stronger. The third kind of change is the change that's liberating, that's freeing. And I kind of already touched on a little bit. So when we turn around and see there's no self here in the flow of change, something had let go, this can be liberating. Or we see the constant change enough, and we take a look, it's very interesting to take a look at between the ceasing of one thing and before the rising of the next. An interesting place to do that, and this is why meditation can be kind of helpful for this, is in meditation your thinking can slow down dramatically. Become thinner, lighter, not so strong, not so heavy, not so dense. And the mind can, you know, and the thoughts become kind of wispy. And sometimes they seem like they stop or disappear or recede far in the background. And a person can have this experience the ordinary life, thoughts come like a mile a minute, and you know, it's like no gap, you know, like they're coming one on top of the other, and before one's over, the other one has started, and just like, you know, incessant. But in meditation, it gets very, very quiet in there, it can. And some points, people have the experience of a thought will arise, it'll fade and disappear, and then the next thought doesn't arise right away. And that gap is a fascinating place to be. There's freedom there. There's space there. There's a lack of definition. All the definitions we have of who we are don't exist there. And what's it like for you to be alive without any definition, without any idea? Your history is not there, because history is, you know, history, what is history? I mean, it's mostly in your memory, right? So when you tell yourself a story about the past, but when you're not telling yourself a story because there's no thoughts, what happens to your history? When you're not having a thought about the future, what happens to the future? Who are you? Who are you when you can't use thoughts to answer the question? For some people, that's a liberating moment. And to kind of, you know, see, oh, look at that. I'm still breathing. I'm alive. And I don't have to always live in the world of thoughts and ideas. I don't have to always live racing after the next thought, concerned for the next one, fixing that thought, solving the problem of the thought that I just had, defining myself in thoughts. I can be here and breathe and be present and have a certain kind of peace in that gap at the end of one thought and before the next begins. It can be a kind of game changer for some people. Kind of realize there's another game in town. You know, there wasn't just a thought game. And so it's not only about having the better thoughts or more knowledge or read more books or better understanding. There's a whole other thing about it's not an understanding. You know, that's kind of strange. It's not an understanding. It's kind of like almost like the absence of understanding. Not that understanding is unimportant, but it's not the only show in town. There's something else too. And that the gap, you know, there's a gap from, it's a freedom from understanding. It's a freedom from definition. And also it's a freedom from clinging, because clinging tends to arise more often than not in relationship to thoughts. It's a rather kind of, you know, maybe it's a little bit embarrassing. You know, your clinging's not going to like this idea. In that I kind of think that what people cling to when they cling, unless you're holding onto the ladder and you're climbing up the ladder, we cling to ideas, to thoughts. And in that gap where there's no thought, no idea, there's nothing to cling to. So some people have the experience of, you know, in of deeper meditation, of kind of wanting to cling to something, and their mind kind of goes out to grab, and it's kind of like grabbing the air. You know, you end up with nothing, you know, or something, or water, and the water just, you know, runs out your fingers. You can't hold on to it. You can't cling. There's nothing there. Because clinging tends to be to ideas. It's kind of a radical idea itself. Don't cling to that idea. But the, it's, you know, it kind of, that changes the game too a little bit. I mean, if your clinging is always to ideas, I mean, that's, I mean, is that worth it? Is it worth clinging to ideas? Or is it better to have ideas and use them to guide our lives and support our lives, but not cling to them? To have ideas be light, the thoughts we have be light and easeful, and our breathing to be at ease, rather than this movement of contraction, the movement of holding, movement of clinging, resisting that goes on. So this third level of seeing change is seeing change in a way that frees the mind, that frees us, that gives us space and openness and peace. The kind of seeing of change that brings peace. And they say in Buddhism that this peace, there's a peace that belongs to kind of in a certain kind of way, belongs to an unchanging dimension of our life. So how when everything's changing, there could be some dimension which is peaceful and doesn't change, is a little bit, you know, that's a whole topic in itself. But to experience peace. So whether you know it or not, you are living in a world of change. Whether you know it not or not, you yourself are a walking embodiment of change. Change is part and parcel of this life. It's kind of intimately part of your life. What is your relationship to change? What happens if you tune in for a while to the changing nature of phenomena rather than to the phenomena in and of itself? And then can you use that to see your relationship to it? Are you trying to stop the change? Are you trying to encourage it? trying to get, you know, trying to, you know, are you clinging to something? What is your relationship to change? Are you comfortable with change? Is this the idea of change frightening? Is the idea of change confusing? What's your relationship to change? If you continue doing mindfulness practice and meditation, chances are that your relationship to change become more and more trusting and comfortable, more and more easeful with it. And certainly it'll stop being an enemy or a problem. So those are my thoughts today. And we have a few minutes. And if anyone has any questions or comments you'd like to make about this, or if you have any protests, if you feel like, you know, this is not right, you know what's permanent. Simply, please, anything. Is there a mic over there?
When you talk about finding a way to be free of an idea of things, I had two experiences like this. One, when I had quite a serious brain damage experience in a car accident. I don't think I thought about things very much for a while. Also, a few years later, one of my friends had Alzheimer's, and I used to go see her. We didn't really talk about things. We didn't talk that much. What do you think about that? Is that like too much of a shortcut or not? I mean, you know, getting away with something, you know, it wasn't really, you know, working to get into this state. We just sort of like this garbage truck hit me and then, you know, that's what happened.
Please don't go out and look for an accident to happen.
Yeah, please don't.
So, but what was it like for you? For you after the accident and with your friend,
uh-huh.
Was there something that was... I don't know what the right word is, but something that was important for you or valuable in that experience or peaceful in that experience?
I felt like when I was with my friend, I felt like I had access to something that a lot of friends, other people would come see her too, that it was harder for them. There was more contrast between their regular life and life with her. So with me, it's just like, okay, here we are.
Yeah, what was that like for you? Did you appreciate that opportunity in some way? Or?
Oh, I thought it was great I could be with her that way. I mean, I really appreciated
Was it great being with yourself that way?
I think when you're recovering from head injury, you're aware that other people can do things you can't do, you know, and that you can't do things that you could do 2 weeks ago, you know. So that's hard. There was a point early where I knew how to get around in the bath, they showed me how to get to the bathroom and stuff in the hospital, and I just was functioning. And then one day, I knew that you go to the toilet and then you wash your hands, and then I go back to my bed. You know, I knew how to do these things. Then there was a point where I looked up while I was washing my hands, I looked in the mirror, and I saw that is kind of like my face, except I have a black eye and there's bandages. And I hadn't really thought about my face or who I was. It was sort of like, oh yeah, that's this person that's me, and you know. Then I asked somebody what happened, why was I there? But before that, I was just doing stuff, you know. I didn't really reflect on how I felt about doing stuff. It was just now, you know. At first, they had to take me in a wheelchair, and then I found I could do it by myself, you know.
Was there anything looking back at that experience?
Yeah.
I mean, as you're living your life now.
Uh huh.
Did you learn any important lesson about a way of being from that has been useful for you, or is that just an interesting phase in your life? And
I found I have more tolerance for being with people who have some difficulty like that.
Nice.
That's about it. I mean, I didn't have this. I don't think I had this experience like what you're talking about, like some realization, you know. But what you're saying sounded very similar to it. That's all.
I've had friends who've had serious accidents and concussions and stuff, and they said it was kind of life changing for them because they felt like they experienced their life in a whole very nice way. Everything got kind of precious, very still, kind of peaceful, and there wasn't this bombardment of thoughts and ideas that they were used to. They didn't even realize that they had been living with that all the time. and showed them another way of being. And that things came back, and so sometimes they came back and they were a little disappointed.
Yeah.
I think when you come out of a coma, yeah, I felt very clean, like it's a very clean slate. And I've heard that other people feel the same way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I've known people who've had that kind of experience and then, in non-accident kind of ways, try to get back to it. And they spend years trying to get back to something like that.
Most of the experience in a companionship with someone who has something like that, where it's easier for me to go into it. You know,
That's a great gift you have then, to spend time with people like that. It's very nice. Thank you. Maybe time for one more. Yep, up here on the.
All right. I just liked what you said about, you know, change and how, I guess all my life I've sort of struggled with the conception of, you know, like reality, like life being real or not. And I've always been, really afraid. But I like what you said about how a certain, you know, action that you do could be your last. Like, you know, my first meal. Mm-hmm. I mean, my last meal, or my last time talking to one of my friends. And, you know, even though I'm young, like, I could still, you know, unforeseen circumstances can occur. And, you know, it's nice to accept change. Mm-hmm. And, like what you said.
Yeah, and so I think one of the hopes in saying this is that, if you allow you to really be present for your experience as it's being lived, and really present for it, and don't miss it because you're lost in the future, or lost in the past, or lost in fantasy or ideas or thoughts. There's something wonderful about in Buddhism, the idea is to wake up. So to wake up to this moment. And for some people, this idea, some people like the idea to remind themselves, this could be the last time. And not so much to, you know, I mean, mostly so they can be more awake in what they're doing. And they might live again for 50 years, but those 50 years become a lot of special moments. Okay, so things change. There's been a lot of small changes, and in 30 seconds there can be a big change in this room. And the change will keep going on. So thank you all very much.